well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Hope you had a good weekend. Thanks so much for being a part of the program today. We're going to be talking with Pete Fraselli joining us in just a moment here, a former Deputy Assistant Director of the ATF. I reached out to Pete on Friday to ask about what he had heard regarding any changes to the ATF's zero tolerance policy for FFLs. I know this policy was announced a couple of years ago. Basically, even minor infractions would be seen as willful violations of ATF regulations, and the agency would then go to shut down these gun stores around the country. Had a very interesting conversation with Pete. I'm looking forward to continuing that here in a moment, but I also want to get Pete's thoughts and see what he knows about the executive actions that are coming from the Biden administration. That was announced over the weekend that Joe Biden is expected to take more executive action to deal with quote-unquote gun violence at some point this week. So what is the scope of those changes? What are we talking about? New rules proposed by the ATF? Is this something, just a window dressing for the Biden administration? We'll talk about it with Pete Fraselli. Take a look and a listen. Pete, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Pleasure being here, brother. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. We got a lot to talk about, but I want to get started with what I reached out to you about on Friday, this supposed change to the ATF zero tolerance policy. And you said that you actually have heard that some changes have been made, right?
Yeah, I did actually. And it's a result of a number of factors. One is pressure coming from Capitol Hill. There's other pressure coming from within ATF. Like I told you many times, there's a lot of folks in ATF who believe, like I believe, that ATF should be going after armed violent criminals and not focusing on the industry as an enemy. And many of them recognize that the industry was a good partner in helping get the guns out of the hands of criminals. I mean, like I said, and like I wrote in my book, they were our partner. I felt like we abandoned them by turning our back on them and by going after them so aggressively. And from what I'm hearing, the pressure came from Capitol Hill, from folks who were sympathetic to the industry and recognizing that violent crime is a problem, but also people from within ATF who liked it better under the way Tom Brandon and Pete Todd Jones ran the organization, where they recognized if an FFL needed some help or their business records were out of order because of honest mistakes, let's help them get things right and put them on their feet and teach them rather than punish them. So that's what I've heard.
Right. Do you know the scope of what has changed? Have you heard any details about what this new policy looks like?
Well, what I'm hearing is that they're trying to devise a way to use artificial intelligence to identify the gun dealers who may be putting weapons intentionally into the wrong hands. And again, that's going to be a minuscule number based on my experience. Now, does this mean that we're out of the woods? No, because I don't fully trust artificial intelligence. I had someone write a biography about me using artificial intelligence that said I was an FBI agent, undercover NYPD, all factually incorrect. And there's a lot of open source information about me on the World Wide Web. So I don't necessarily trust artificial intelligence. I think it's a step in the right direction. But, something else I'll bring up, Cam, is I was actually recently asked to go give a presentation on leadership at an ATF school for new leaders. And when I say new leaders, some of them have been with ATF. I know the walls of headquarters shook a little when I walked in there, but some of them had been with ATF for 29, 30 years. And some of them were people who got hired from other government entities to lead, different divisions and branches within headquarters. And after I gave the presentation, which focused largely on Fast and Furious and stuff that we weren't even allowed to talk about in headquarters prior to that, a lot of them approached me and they too sympathized with the industry because they've been around for a long time. They saw how things worked in the past. They didn't like the direction it was going in, but they even voiced a slight concern. And that's that we've hired a lot of industry operations investigators during this zero tolerance time. And it's a matter of educating those folks on how to work with the industry in a more productive way where you're here to coach them, help them. And look, if someone's putting guns in the hands of criminals intentionally, then there needs to be repercussions. But again, it's a matter of walking that fine line. So the concern about some of the more senior people is how do we train these newer folks on how to do this the old way that they felt was the more effective way. So it was an interesting conversation and I was glad that they were honest with me.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about this shift that's taking place under Steve Dettelbach. Not only do we have the zero tolerance policy announced by the Biden administration, but you also have the release of these demand two letters
And, you know, I know that the ATF spokesperson has said, look, just because you're a part of this program, you know, you've had, 25 guns that have been traced within 2 years of sale. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing anything wrong. We've seen the media run this as, you know, these are where the crime guns are coming from. These are the bad apple dealers. You know, is that, you think, a part of this shift in terms of how the ATF and how the current administration are treating FFLs? And again, this, you know, this partnership is now sort of seen as, you know, well, these folks are the enemy, right?
Correct. And look, a lot of this is being, look, Dettelbach is not a fan of guns. I don't know the man. I actually met the man for the first time at a retirement party recently. I wasn't going to introduce myself to him because I've been critical of him. And I think a good leader should be able to take criticism, frankly, from the outside. But my wife kept prodding me, go talk to him, go introduce yourself. And I did. And you could tell he was a little bit uncomfortable, but he was very pleasant. You know, he's a politician. But I know from what I'm hearing, he's getting a lot of pressure. And again, I don't believe if you have a... swore an oath to the Constitution, right? Not to any director, not to any president, not to any cabinet official, not to an attorney general. So, I mean, if he's being asked to do things that he views as unethical, he should say no. That's what I would have done if I were in his shoes. But he's, you know, again, I think he's a believer in some of these things. But I know that the pressure is coming from the White House, from the Office of Gun Violence Prevention, which, as you know, is staffed by people like Rob Wilcox, who used to be with Everytown, and others that are activists. And I think they want to demonize the industry. They scare me a lot more than Steve Dettelbach does. But yeah, I thought this whole name and shame thing, which would have never happened under a previous ATF director, was in bad form. And it was almost laughable because one of the FFLs that was of concern was the DC Metro Police Department, if you recall.
Yep.
So, I mean, what they forget is that once the guns are sold into the lawful market to people who are possessing the guns under their Second Amendment rights, if those are stolen and turn up somewhere, that's not the fault of the dealer. That's not the fault of the person who is the victim of a burglary. That's where I have a problem with that whole name and shame, as we call it, the name and shame list, because I don't think it's fair. And look, some FFLs are very small. They don't sell a lot of guns. Some are quite large. One example would be Lone Wolf Trading Company in Arizona, which is, if you recall, sold a lot of guns that wound up in Mexico. And some of those guns were being sold at the behest of ATF. If you recall correctly, the dealer's like, hey, we don't want to sell to these people anymore. And the U.S. Attorney's Office and ATF management said, no, keep selling. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that factor into how these guns wind up in the street that really are not the fault of the dealer in 99% of those instances. And candidly, often aren't the fault of the person who buys them, with the exception of straw purchasers, which, as you know, are buying it for people who can't buy guns, which is a crime. Punish the criminal, not the industry. Not the inanimate object that's being traded as part of that lawful commerce.
That's right. And you know, and listen, I mean, even when it comes to straw purchases, you know, it's not always as egregious as, you know, a couple walking in, the guy pointing out the gun for his girlfriend to buy. You know, a lot of times these are people with, again, most of the time, I would say these are people with no records. Walk into the store, they buy a firearm. There's nothing necessarily that would trigger anything on the part of the seller to say, okay, this is a suspicious sale, right? I mean, this is something that gun store employees are trained to look for. Yes. And this is something that, I think there's a partnership between FFLs and law enforcement in that regard. But, you know, just because a gun is straw purchased isn't necessarily an indication that there was a willful violation of federal law on the part of the seller.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why ATF, the title of an ATF special agent technically is criminal investigator. They're supposed to investigate these things. I went with my wife to buy her Glock 43. I helped her pick it out to someone that might have looked like a straw purchase. You know, obviously she wants to be able to defend herself with crime on the rise and whatnot. But look, to your point, the dealers were taught in conjunction with the National Shooting Sports Foundation, by the way, who were great partners with ATF, to work on a training curriculum to help the dealers identify these straw purchasers. But let's be honest, the straw purchase is an act of deception. The ones who are buying to pass that gun off to a criminal, they know that before they walk into the store. That's an act of deception. So if the dealer can't pick up on that deception because the person's really good at deceiving, that's not the fault of the dealer. That's the fault of the criminal, who's just a really effective criminal, as opposed to the person who's there, who in some ways is the victim of the crime. Because look, these are mom and pop shops in most instances. them losing their license means they lose their livelihood. They're not going there breaking the law on purpose to put guns into the hands of criminals. I found that most FFLs are probably as strong law and order folks as most of the agents that I worked with.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, at least based on the FFLs that I know. Now, you know, a couple minutes ago, you mentioned the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, Rob Wilcox, Kamala Harris is, you know, ostensibly in charge of that White House office. We heard over the weekend that Joe Biden is planning on announcing some additional executive actions to deal with, quote unquote, gun violence. I'm curious, have you heard anything about what those new executive actions might be?
I have not. It's concerning. Look, I'll be honest with you. When I heard that Kamala Harris was going to be the gun czar in way back in the day, I was a little bit relieved because I saw how ineffective she was at the border. So I figured there was going to be a title and she would completely like not do a damn thing towards that end. But she hired some people who were pretty aggressive and adamantly anti-gun. And again, I don't see Steve Dettelbach pushing back. So I hope that ATF doesn't get used once again as a pawn in some of these stupid ideas that they have. But they've shown the ability to really stretch things. When I say they, I mean this administration with the use of executive orders. So it's troubling. If I hear things, I'll send you an email and we can chat in great detail about it. But at this point, I haven't heard anything, but it is concerning to me.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, I you know, there's a part of me that says, okay, it's probably going to be something minor, maybe not even involving an ATF rule change, because, of course, that takes time, right? I mean, you've got to submit this for public comment. So even if Biden announced something, it wouldn't be finalized until after the election, maybe not until after whoever wins the election is sworn in. At the same time, there's a part of me that says, OK, well, maybe it's not going to be window dressing. Maybe they really are going to go for broke, make a pitch, you know, to these voters. You and I have talked before about the efforts that are underway behind the scenes to go after Glock. Right. So White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention has been pushing the ATF to reclassify Glocks as machine guns because of their supposed ready convertibility. And so there's a part of me that wonders, okay, are they going to go big, in advance of the election, or are they going to, you know, just do sort of, you know, more minutiae stuff that, will get a press release or two, will, you know, put the issue of quote unquote gun violence out there for, you know, 24 hours or so. Again, I don't know, which way they're going to go. I could see it going either way, quite frankly, but, you know, talking about Kamala Harris, how concerned are you about her lack of specificity when it comes to her gun policies, right? We know she says she wants a ban on so-called assault weapons. Her campaign says she no longer believes in the mandatory buyback, quote unquote, of these firearms. She talks about, you know, red flag laws, universal background checks. How concerned are you, Pete, about what 4 years of Kamala Harris in the White House would mean for the right to keep and bear arms?
Oh, I'm terrified by it, frankly. And look, she flips more than pancakes, man. Let's not kid ourselves. And let's not forget, she is apparently a gun owner. I believe that. I believe that I can actually, you know, spit at the moon and knock it out of the Earth's orbit. It's troubling. And look, we spoke about the Glock discussions. We spoke about there were discussions where they were looking to pass a ruling. They would just never move forward on it. But if you sell to military or law enforcement, they wanted to pass an order that you could not sell to the civilian population. And apparently they floated it past either SIG or somebody like that. And they were like, are you kidding me? We'd stop selling to the government because our bread and butter comes from civilian sales. So they're exploring a lot of different options. But I think that they operate sometimes under this go big or go home mantra. And knowing the activists in the White House that are there now in that office, it is troubling. Because do I think that she has the say it plainly, the intelligence to push back on a bad idea? No, I don't. I don't think that she's very tuned into, you know, what's going on with crime, what's going on, you know, with the firearms industry, and that they are actually a part of the solution, not part of the problem. Look, right now they're going after the gun industry, but they're giving a pass to criminals all over the country. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Crime is on the rise. We found out that the FBI was misleading with the crime statistics, which makes you wonder why. I mean, it's almost like what they do is they want you to not believe your lying eyes. You know, they want you to believe what they're saying. But it does frighten me that they'll try something, go big or go home. And, you know, I think that they'll even do it just to try to get votes, which will hurt us for a while, knowing full well that whatever they do might get overturned by the courts, because the courts have overturned a lot of their bad ideas thus far. But it does stop them from trying. And the other concerns I have is how much is the White House and perhaps even ATF at the direction of the White House, I haven't heard this, but how much are they helping with that Chicago lawsuit against Glock, right? With it, and then are they helping at all with the Mexico lawsuit? Because we know what's going on. That lawsuit's not dead. And, you know, so those are two troubling things as well. Like, they're attacking the industry from so many different angles, yet criminals get a pass. That to me is the most insulting thing, is how the criminals are getting a pass these days, and folks who are just trying to make a living have to watch their backs. It's not fair. I mean, there's no other way to describe it.
Yeah. No, I listen, I think you're absolutely right about that. And including, by the way, straw purchases. I saw a story earlier today where a woman who was convicted of a straw purchase, I think was given shock parole, and now has the opportunity to expunge her record completely after that crime. You know, we've seen countless stories of individuals who have been accused of violent crimes, and they're getting probation. There were, you know, in one case I saw out of California, a guy was convicted or took a guilty plea to, pled no contest to attempted murder. 5 years, 5 year sentence in California. That was it. And of course, with time served, he's out in what? 2.5, 2 years. I mean, that is absolutely ridiculous. Meanwhile, again, as you say, they want to go after your ability to commonly own firearms, magazines. They want you not to be able to carry anywhere. Maybe not you, Pete, you know, because there are generally the exceptions for law enforcement or former law enforcement. So you guys are special. But me, they don't want me to be able to carry anywhere, right? And I suppose on down the line, once they restrict the rights of people like me, then they go after the rights of people like you too, right? Then all of a sudden it's police violence is gun violence. So we can't exempt you anymore.
I'm going to push back a little bit on you.
Okay.
There.
All right.
I'm not saying, look, I came from New York where when you retired as a cop, you got a permit because the belief was that you arrested some really bad people. They may come looking for you later. It happens. Well, Bloomberg made it very, very difficult for retired law enforcement officers to keep those permits. It became a challenge. I wouldn't doubt for a second that this administration wouldn't push back on H.R. 218. I know that they're adamantly against reciprocal carry, which I think makes perfect sense to me, not being against it. Reciprocal carry. If you are a good person and you live in South Carolina and you're going to take a vacation to wherever and you've proven yourself to be trustworthy with a firearm, you should be able to take that firearm with you. I have no problem with reciprocal carry. I have no problem with constitutional carry. My belief is if you're a criminal, then you shouldn't have a gun if you're a violent criminal. If you're going to hurt somebody, then I have a problem with you possessing a gun. But beyond that, you know, so do I think that because I'm a retired law enforcement officer that I'm safe? Not for a second. And I do have a permit here in Virginia, aside from my HR 218 carry, for that very reason. So it's, you know, it's an interesting world that we're living in these days. And again, it's sad that when we are in the eyes of some perceived as the bad guy, but the criminal is now the victim. I mean, go figure.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, and I hope that the way that you put that is so perfect. And I hope that voters actually think about this, right? We're all concerned about public safety. We're all concerned about violent crime. The question isn't who cares more, right? The question is, what do we do about it? And, you know, unfortunately, Kamala Harris, from wanting to take school resource officers out of schools, to, you know, demilitarize our public schools, to the continued police shortage that we see. You know, Birmingham, Alabama had a mass shooting this past weekend. What I've heard is police believe it was a murder for hire plot, probably not involving legal gun owners, although they don't have any suspects that have been named. But Birmingham's mayor came out and blamed permitless carry, said we need to ban so-called assault weapons, even though apparently handguns were used in this attack. Said nothing about the fact that Birmingham police short 250 uniformed officers. They are a little above 50% of their staffing levels. Now, Pete, I got to ask you, do you think that might have an impact on violent crime in the city?
Oh, of course. Hey, look, there was recently a press conference here in this area where I believe it was the U.S. attorney or one of the chief prosecutors from the district was talking about the AR-15 and its ability to shoot something like 300 rounds in a second or something. Like, just the stuff that comes out of their mouths is mind blowing. I would love to have had one of the reporters at that press conference where Ms. Harris discussed being a gun owner. I would love to have had some questions about, hey, what gun do you have? What model? Or even ask her to describe an assault rifle. Steve Dettelbach couldn't do it. It would be nice to try to see Kamala Harris try to do it. Look, a rifle is a rifle. A machine gun is a machine gun. An AR-15, as you know, is no deadlier than a bolt-action deer rifle. So, you know, it's the person, not the item that we should be concerned about. If you're a criminal and you're using a gun to hurt somebody else and it's not a self-defense, it's not justifiable, put them in jail and throw away the key as far as I'm concerned. But leave law-abiding citizens alone to enjoy their rights and to live their life. And you know what? To be able to defend themselves. Look, whether they want to defend their home and their family or whether they want to go target shooting or whether they are a hunter or whether they just like guns and want to collect them. If they're not hurting anybody, that should be nobody's business.
Amen. I'm right there with you. And I'm also with you when it comes to the reporting and the questioning that Kamala Harris has been getting. In fact, I wrote something for Bearing Arms earlier today. You know, she did that live stream event with Oprah. And Oprah said, I was shocked. I was so surprised to learn that you owned a gun, even though she said it 5 years ago. And by the way, does Kamala Harris not talk about her gun ownership at all? I mean, why is everybody, apparently even those who are at least somewhat close to her, why are they so supposedly shocked and surprised by that revelation? So, you know, I wrote a piece over the weekend talking about what we don't know about Kamala Harris's gun ownership. Snopes actually ran a fact check piece a few days ago calling it true that Kamala Harris owns a gun. And their entire evidence, Pete, was that she said she's a gun owner. That's it. So I want to know, like, okay, what type of gun do you own? Maybe you don't want to, you know, give advertising to the particular gun company. Is the gun that you own off roster in California? Is it available for sale to civilians, or, you know, is it a something reserved for law enforcement? How often do you go to the range to train with your firearm? And why did you become a gun owner? I mean, that to me is the obvious question that people aren't asking. I know she said, well, I was a prosecutor. Okay, yeah. Pete, you know as well as I do. I mean, when you talk to people, it's one of my favorite questions to ask. How did you become a gun owner? There's generally a pretty good story involved, right? And whether it's I just grew up around firearms, it's always been a part of my life, or there was a specific moment in my life where I thought, you know what? It's time for me to get armed. Nobody's asked that question of Kamala Harris, but she hasn't volunteered that information either, right? It's just like she's checking the box of, yes, I'm a gun owner. Yes, I support the Second Amendment, but I'm also in favor of an assault weapons ban, red flag law, all this other stuff. She doesn't talk about her gun ownership the way that, frankly, most gun owners do.
Sure. Well, I'll throw this in there. My wife, I've been married to her for 30 years. We've been together longer than that. I was a cop when I met her. I've always had guns. Some of them were duty weapons. Some were guns I bought from other cops. Some of them I had to sell during that whole F&F time, Fast and Furious, to pay lawyers' bills. I sold them to other cops. My kids both shoot. My daughter is a competitive shooter. She's also in law enforcement. My son is a very good shot. He's a range instructor for the Department of Justice. I mean, so we've been around guns, but my wife never wanted to have a firearm of her own. She was afraid, candidly. She now shoots. She now has, as I mentioned earlier, a Glock 43. And it's because of the policies of this administration that have allowed crime to go off the hook that she now feels compelled to be able to defend herself, as is her right. So, you know, that's another thing I'd like to ask her. I mean, let's not forget, this is the same person that supported the Minnesota Freedom Fund to allow people to stay out on the streets, burning towns to the ground. Now, all of a sudden, you know, it's mind blowing, brother. We're living through some strange times. And this November is such an important election. I mean, I think without question, most important election of my lifetime.
I think you're right. I mean, listen, we say that every 4 years, but I think it's true every 4 years, right? The most important election is the one that's staring us right in the face. And we've seen what the last 4 years have meant in terms of an administration that has abused its executive authority to go after our right to keep and bear arms. And I think you're going to see that in overdrive if Kamala Harris wins. And if the Senate remains in the hands of the Democrats, if they get complete control of Congress as well, and it's Katie bar the door. I mean, I think we're going to be looking at, you know, nuking the filibuster, packing the Supreme Court, and overturning decisions like Heller, McDonald, and Bruin. I mean, I think that is absolutely on the table.
Well, you know, here's the thing that frightens me, again, just as much as Harris being in presidency, is look, the Democrats, you got to give them credit. And I'm an independent. I'm not really on either side. I lean Republican because I'm a law and order guy. They stick together. And right now on the right, the Republicans, they're eating their own. I mean, there needs to be some common sense and there needs to be some across the aisle cooperation as well. Because right now it's like it's a blood sport, American politics. And that's not what us, the taxpayer, wants. So, I mean, until people start voting based on people's performance rather than on what they say, we got problems.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to have some problems for the foreseeable future, because I don't know that we're going to see a huge change in how the electorate is voting. Certainly that's how, you know, I think the Harris campaign is well aware of that. And I think they're playing into that. I think it's part of their campaign strategy, right? Keep her on lockdown as much as possible. Hold these interviews only when, you know, it's going to be either a friendly interview or like Oprah, or it's going to be a local news anchor who's not going to have the knowledge base to get into specific questions, right? She's not going to sit down with me. She's not going to sit down with Stephen Gutowski of The Reload. She's not going to sit down with anybody who actually knows anything about Second Amendment issues. When she was asked at the National Association of Black Journalists about handgun violence, and kudos to the NPR reporter who actually asked her about this and tried to press her on it, because she immediately tried to shift to, well, let's ban assault weapons. She got it so wrong. Yes. Pete, I mean, right. She talked about, well, you know, background checks, gun dealers can go to flea markets and they don't have to register their sales. Like somehow laws are different for FFLs when they're selling at a swap meet or a flea market. That's not the case. She said that many homicides are committed by illegally obtained firearms, which is true, but she made it sound like those guns were illegally obtained at gun shows or at flea markets, which is not true. According to a 2016 DOJ study, over half of the firearms that were either used in crime or possessed by somebody when they were arrested for a violent crime were stolen. Another 43% were obtained on the black market. 0.8% of federal inmates who were surveyed said they got their gun at a gun show. And that would include people who were legally eligible to purchase a firearm at the time, right? So, you know, there are good reasons why her campaign wants to keep her away from people with knowledge who can ask these types of questions. Because she sounds like an idiot, or she just is a liar when she is, you know, actually forced to get beyond the sort of gun control bumper sticker slogans.
Well, I got a question I would love to ask her, because we're talking about shootings now and violence. You know, I don't know if you're following this. In the city of Chicago, they're doing away with ShotSpotter, which is the technology that can triangulate gunshots. It's actually very good technology. It can actually tell if there's multiple shots being fired from different shooters, if there are different calibers being used. It can even detect if the shooter is running. I mean, it's good technology. And what it's done over the years is it's actually had the police respond to a number of incidents where someone is bleeding in the street, but no one has called 911. So it is saving lives, but it's also causing police encounters, and many times with people of color, because when ShotSpotter detects gunshots, it notifies the police to exactly where those shots are taking place. And if someone's standing there, they might get spoken to. Hey, what are you doing? Put your hands on the wall, pat it down or whatever. Again, normal stuff that happens under U.S. versus Terry, legal interactions between police and the population. But sometimes those lead to arrests. Well, the mayor of Chicago, right, the same city that's suing Glock for being able to be converted into machine guns, has decided that he no longer wants to have ShotSpotter, which has saved countless lives and helps enforce the law when it comes to bad people using guns. So I would love to ask Kamala Harris what she thinks of that, since she's so tough on crime and wants to protect people from illegal guns, when a member of her own party has decided to abandon technology that works superbly at not just putting people in jail who were shooting at other people, but saving lives in those instances where someone is shot and the bad guy has fled the scene and that person's laying there bleeding out when no one has called 911 because people are afraid to get involved these days. So it's just, again, we're living in some crazy times, brother.
We absolutely are. Pete, thank you, man, for coming on the program. And as always, good talking with you. I'm glad to see you're doing well. And I look forward to doing this again very, very soon.
Same here, brother. God bless you and yours. Take care.
My thanks to Pete for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here very soon. Since Pete was talking about the soft on crime attitudes of Democrats, hard on law-abiding gun owners, I think it's a pretty good segue for today's recidivist report, our good deed of the day, and our armed citizen story. We'll start, however, with the soft on crime story, right? This one comes from Baltimore, Maryland. Democrat-controlled Baltimore, Maryland, and Democrat-controlled Maryland, right? Maryland, the state legislature there, firmly in control of Democrats. Democrats have a lock grip on city government in Baltimore, so you can't really pin the blame on what's going on with violent criminals on Republicans, although I'm sure the Democrats would love to do so, right? So there's this headline from WBAL in Baltimore. Makes me very anxious. Assault survivor frustrated with sentencing in her case. The victim, who is not being named because she was the victim of a crime, was attacked while walking home last November near Lombard Street and South Patterson Park Avenue. She said, now if I'm walking, especially at night, if someone's behind me, it's nerve-wracking. Even during the day, if someone walks behind me or even thinks about someone walking behind me, it makes me very anxious. She was thrown to the ground. She was punched. She was kicked in the head. Her assailants were a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. They took her keys. They tried to steal her car before they were caught. According to WBAL, the boys were released just hours later. They weren't taken to juvenile detention. They were just sent home to be with their parents. The victim said she pushed prosecutors to charge them with more than just robbery. And eventually they were charged with 12 different counts. But as you know, it doesn't really matter how many crimes you're charged with, right? The vast majority of time you're going to get offered a plea deal. And that's what happened here. The WBAL reports the 12-year-old took a plea. The now 15-year-old, who was 14 at the time, actually decided to go to trial and was found guilty of assault, robbery, and attempted car theft. But when it came time for sentencing, WBAL reports that both the 12-year-old and the now 15-year-old were ordered to probation and community service. They were also told to write an apology letter, get counseling, and they were ordered to stay away from the area. That's it. That's it. The victim says, you know, especially the older one, he's going to turn 16 soon. And he's never really had any intense intervention. Once he turned 16, he'd be charged as an adult. She said, the victim did. She was hoping for more. Not only to provide consequences for the brutal assault that she suffered, but again, to actually start to rehabilitate these teens, right? To show that there are consequences for your actions. She said, it's the final piece for me. It's not the final piece for them, the community, or the system. I feel like there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. The victim says, last Thursday, at the 12-year-old sentencing, he's the one that took the plea deal, she learned that the boy is a person of interest in 40 different cases. And she said that she has been told, she didn't say by whom, but that she's been told that both of these kids have continued to commit crimes after she was attacked. And again, without any consequences, why would they change their ways? So you don't go to school for a day because you have to go to court. So you get arrested and then you get sent home to your parents instead of juvenile detention. I don't think either of those things. Oh, and you get probation when you're convicted or when you take a guilty plea. I don't think any of those things are conducive for rehabilitating these juvenile offenders. And yet, that's the status quo in Democrat-controlled Baltimore, Maryland. All right, today's Armed Citizen story. Don't have a ton of information, just really not much more than what the headline indicates. A Dallas shooting, victim shoots attacker in Far East Dallas. This was over the weekend. It involved a shooting at a home, according to Dallas police. It was about 12:30 Saturday morning when police were called to a home on Trislogos Lane. Investigators say the suspect in this case was physically assaulting the victim with their fists. When the victim was able to get a hold of a gun, shot the suspect. The suspect rushed to the hospital in critical condition. Fox 4 in Dallas reports that charges in the case are pending. But it doesn't say against who. It sounds like it would be the initial aggressor in this case. Police say the victim and the suspect did know each other, but they didn't go any further detail about the relationship. We, again, don't have any more information, so we'll keep our eyes open for more details about this, what appears to be a self-defense shooting in Dallas here as the case continues. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Police officers in Kentwood, Michigan, who helped out a man in a wheelchair after his batteries failed, and he was left stranded. Yeah, there's the headline, pushed from the popo, maybe pushed by the popo. Dominic Russell says, I definitely do appreciate the officers in question. The 28-year-old said that he had just finished volunteering. He was on his way home when the batteries in his wheelchair just died. There were two responding officers, Officer Joseph and Officer Mendez, who saw what happened early last Tuesday morning. They asked Russell, did you run out of gas? Captain Tim Waringa told Fox 17, this is not a call that they've been on before. Russell said that he had hesitated to call the local police for help because this was the first time that this had happened to him. He said, I spent like an hour before I decided I'd just end up calling 911. He said, I know there's negativity within the police departments, but not all the police officers are bad. There's some good police officers out there, like Officer Mendez and Officer Joseph. When the two arrived on scene, they kind of ran through a couple of different scenarios about how to get them home. They said, well, we can drive them home, but what do we do with the wheelchair? Waringa said, it's going to sound silly, but a tow truck to get the wheelchair home. So you can just imagine, he said, that kind of rolling down the road. We all know that's going to cost money. So in the end, the two officers, Officer Mendez and Officer Joseph, just decided that the easiest thing to do for everybody involved would be to push Mr. Russell back home in his wheelchair. Russell said, I definitely do appreciate him. He's about a mile away. Officers took breaks and switched on pushing Russell down the road. Russell said, I know it's hard work, not only pushing the chair, but then pushing a chair with somebody in it. One of the officers on his body cam can be heard saying, I haven't worked out this hard in a while. Took about 15 minutes, but Russell did make it home safe and sound. He said, I told him, like I've told other people, they could have just left me there. They could have been like, well, you got to find your own way. And so I'm grateful that they helped me out. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Officer Mendez, Officer Joseph, they're in Kentwood, Michigan. Thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow, talking about some of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. But in the meantime, be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day, where you are keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment-related stories, including Kamala Harris's latest whoppers. We've got, again, the response to the shooting in Birmingham, Alabama, and more. All waiting for you there at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I would also encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content. You'll get an ad-free experience. And other benefits. But you'll also be supporting the independent post-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing. Bearing Arms. In this day and age of big tech censorship and anti-gun bias, like, frankly, I have not seen in 20 years of covering this issue. And your support is more important than ever before. So thank you again. Look forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.